As you can see, they're very slow moving, so they would be easy to hunt. People call them tribbles.
Cute.
Aww.
There's been a lab breach.
I made one of the most important scientific discoveries of our time!
Don't show any weakness, or they will eat you alive. Good luck out there, Captain.
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, pouring a bowl of tribbles. You know why, Cam? Because my tummy needs a nibble.
And we're here this week to talk about the latest short Trek, The Trouble with Edward.
Which, I'm such a dunce. Remember last week when we were kind of talking about what we'd be tackling, and I called it The Issue with Edward?
And then The Problem with Edward, yeah.
Yeah, so...
We were, like, debating, and we're like... Definitely problem. Problem.
It shows how smart we are as right. Star Trek fans to realize that this was obviously going to be the Tribble episode.
Yeah.
Cam, let's just get into it. I have never seen an episode or any sort of like adventure in Star Trek that quite tackled this in this particular tone.
Right.
I loved it. I think this was just one of the most extraordinary like examples of kind of like content that we can produce in this modern era of television. We get these short treks going on. This is what number, I think, six at this point in their history over the last year. I'm loving what they're doing with this. And I think like the comedy works for me. And this is also about something. This is about like toxic masculinity. This is also talking about like humanity's plague upon like ecology as well. And just our own interference. Like there's so many layers to pick apart here. And I think it was just so clever of them to wrap it all up in a comedic episode where people could laugh on it on one level and then they can dig into it deeper on another level there. What was your initial takeaway, Cam?
Yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of it. Like I thought it was just incredibly funny, very clever, and I loved how offbeat it was. I think this is something I'm hoping the short treks maybe experiment a little more with, and it sounds like they're going to with the animation one coming up, but like that maybe it's not the best idea to make them just feel like cut footage from an episode, maybe like Runaway, or maybe even arguably the last one we did.
Q&A.
Yeah, Q&A.
Yeah.
In which it feels somewhat to the tone of the show a little bit, whereas like... Maybe just give these things to interesting creators who you're not necessarily going to hand a Star Trek series over to and just let them do whatever they want with that world.
Give it to, I don't know, like, is it Adam Weingard? That's one of our favorite, like, horror directors right now.
Right.
Give it to him. Let him do, like, a horror episode of Star Trek or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Because that's the thing that we love so much about Star Trek is, when we look at the history of it, is how you can genre hop from, you know, week to week. However, modern TV, you have to have much more of this kind of monolithic tone.
Right.
You know, so we get like a lighter episode like Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, but it still works within the continuity, and I mean tonally, within the tonal continuity of Star Trek Discovery.
Whereas like The Escape Artist would be a little wacky to be on Star Trek Discovery.
It would throw people off, and I think that's the genius of these short treks. Like, I don't think they need to keep it to six a year or four a year like we got last year. And I think the fact that they keep amping up the episode count, I could imagine a point where CBS All Access will have like one a month, you know, further down the road, and just like grab talent. This was written by Canadian screenwriter Graham Wagner. He's been a producer on like a whole bunch of great shows that I like.
Portlandia is one of his big things.
Silicon Valley. Yeah. I also love that show. He's done The Office as well, and some like Canadian series that I guess Canadian viewers might be familiar with. But I think this is just kind of, you can grab that talent, pick him out, and just let them like go have like go hog wild with like these crazy adventures. And it means is you can have like these ongoing series which fit within their own structures, and we can just go have some wacky fun with the short treks.
Yeah.
And it's been done to good effect. Like I think the one that we were very hesitant about, I think, was The Brightest Star.
Right.
I think it was one of those episodes where, like, okay, we can kind of predict every step that's going to happen here.
Yeah.
And we were kind of blown away by it. You know, yeah. It's like they're very thoughtful stories, whereas you jump to The Escape Artist, like, the next month, and that's one of the wackiest things we've ever seen ever on Star Trek.
Right.
Because we loved cudgels. Family cudgels.
That episode in particular, actually, I guess that and Runaway, now feel a little strange in the sense that, like, the other short tracks feel more experimental, like they're doing things outside the norm of what you would expect from the franchise. And in a way, by being all over the place, they feel more cohesive as a group. Like, if you presented the idea of short treks and said, you know, here's like Q&A, here's this, you know, the trouble with Edward, here's the escape artist, you'd be like, oh, I get it. It's different artists playing in the Star Trek world, kind of doing their own thing. Whereas Runaway and The Brightest Star feel more like Star Trek Discovery episodes.
Yeah, they feel very much attached to that series. Runaway, I'd say tonally, that is, I guess, leaning more towards the... Discovery is a show that takes itself very seriously, and I think Runaway was their effort to not be so serious.
Right.
I just don't think it was to great effect, in our opinion.
I didn't take it that seriously either.
Yeah. But okay, so I think we can come back to maybe kind of the broader perspective a little bit later on about like what CBS can be doing with, you know, this new platform for delivering content. But first, let's kind of dig into the nitty-gritty of The Trouble with Edward, as we now know the episode is called The Short Trek here. But just with one Edward Larkin here, we've all met this guy. It's, if anyone may question him, his automatic resort is say, well, you're dumb.
Yeah.
You know, and it's one of those like very toxic masculinity sorts of traits. He's trying to undermine his young female captain here.
Yeah.
She also seems to be like a very supportive like commander as well. Yeah. And trying to like...
She's very encouraging.
Yes. And, you know, of course, this is what he resorts to because how dare you question me when, let's be honest, like when he's describing if you tear off all the fur and you get to like this scallopy meat, I'm watching this and I'm like, holy crap, this is going to be an amazing episode.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And then he's like, I gave one to Noel.
He's a foodie. I never thought I'd hear the word foodie uttered on Star Trek. Like, that was amazing to me. So,
yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about maybe kind of the continuity here of Tribbles. Are you were you ready for a Tribble origin story? Do you think it's like something that was done to good effect, I should say?
I thought it was a lot of fun. I mean, it does kind of go against some of the things that Enterprise stated in the episode The Breach. But at the same time, I'm like, should we be handcuffed to you know, an offhand reference in Enterprise at the expense of doing something really interesting and weird and wild?
My answer is no.
Yeah.
Who cares?
And that's why I'm kind of more for Short Treks being this kind of off the main board kind of idea of just artists doing their own things with this franchise, because then you don't have to worry about that. You don't have to be like, you know, in that episode of, you know, Enterprise, Phlox said that Tribbles are known for breeding like crazy.
But maybe Phlox was wrong.
Yeah, sure.
Or maybe Tribbles...
Although he seemed to know a lot, because he's talking about, like, the native reptiles on their planet and everything.
I wouldn't, like, think about it too much. Like, to me, it can be something... It happened 100 years ago.
Sure.
You know, who cares at this point? And then within the... We also saw, you know, Lorca's own Tribble on his desk. It didn't create, like, this whole disaster on Discovery.
Right.
Maybe it's one of those old-school, slower-moving, less prodigious Tribbles that Larkin was originally experimenting.
Well, I believe they said in this short track too, like, this species doesn't breed quickly or something. It's like, well, maybe there's different species of Tribble.
Yeah.
Maybe we are just all lumping them together, which is very...
It's not something I think any fan should get hung up on here, because what we
get... Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. We're talking about Star Trek fans. I get it. But like, what we get here, though, is like a fun origin story that I never even knew that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, like, with the Tribble episodes... I don't know. How about maybe towards the end of our conversation, why don't we rank all the Tribble adventures from the animated series to TOS and Deep Space Nine and now the short track, and we can do that. That'll be fun, too.
And we should say we do have a Tribble episode we did back in the day. I'll post a link to that in the show notes.
I guess we're going to have to do the sequel.
Yeah.
Look for that next week.
Tracing the Tribble Trilogy, too. That's not hard to say at all in the intro.
Now we'll do quadrilogy. Yeah. But quantifying the Quibble quadrilogy. But at this point, look, I think they know that you have to hit kind of a certain peak if you want to lay claim to doing a Tribble episode.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because that's one thing they've always done, is brought a lot of ingenuity and innovative ideas to a Tribble comedy episode. It's not just like, hey, you know, it's season six, we need a light episode. Okay, just throw in the Tribbles. It's right. Like, if you're going to do it, you got to do it really well. And I love the idea of raising the bar each time, even in the short trek. It's not like they just said, you know, replace some of the jokes. We'll just have a fun 15 minutes with Pike and whatever other cast members we can assemble. They actually came up with some really original, weird ideas.
Yeah. The other thing that I do want to bring up, though, here is Edward's toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
It actually shows just how deep-rooted and vile it is, in that, like, he subverts the command of this captain. She loses her ship, and she's being, like, court-martialed, essentially, by this admiral's, like, group. And it's like, oh, yeah.
For the tragic loss.
But it's an entire ship. Yeah, the tragic loss of a crew member. Yeah. It's like, that's how he goes down. But it's like, it's showing, like, just how awful, like, this kind of behavior is within society. And, like, it actually has, like, real consequences on this person, both Edward as well as his crew and the ship itself. I think it's just kind of genius, the way that they're kind of sneaking in these stories in an otherwise, like, very kind of light episode.
Like, you can genuinely find Larkin hilarious in all his screen time. Like, he's a genuinely funny character. Like, his responses definitely got laughs out of me.
Yeah.
Although, the whole time, the first time I watched it, I'm sitting there and I'm like, boy, does this ring a bell. Like, I cannot put my finger on it, but the way H. John Benjamin is doing these lines, there's something about it I recognize completely.
And within the context of Star Trek or wider
outside of
media?
Star Trek, wider in terms of comedy.
Okay.
And I was just like racking my brain. I couldn't get it. And it came to me on the second viewing. And it is very much like a Zach Galifianakis type act of that uncomfortable kind of offhand, like, angry comedy, where, like, you see him do it in, like, Between Two Ferns a lot, in The Hangover as well. And it's like, that totally is what it is. It's that anti-comedy, and that he's not saying anything that's funny, but he's saying it very snidely.
It's just funny you bring that up, because I watched the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Zach Galifianakis just last night, and it actually had, like, a Between Two Ferns segment attached to the end of it as well. And it's that absolutely, like, that's the kind of comedy that he does to great effect as well, with him making, like, snide remarks about Jerry Seinfeld's post-sitcom career as well. You know, making fun of B-movie, which is great. I think the great example of that is when they're in the cafeteria or the mess hall, and that vacuum cleaner gag.
Oh, that's amazing. Like, the giant tube that's sucking up Tribbles.
Well, remember we did the Star Trek 4 podcast, and we were remarking on how there's those kind of devices that hold up windows in the event of an ecological disaster?
Yeah.
And we're like, what on earth was Starfleet thinking by, like, why would they think that there's ever going to be a need for these, like, window holders?
It was like a suction cup on a pole.
Yes. Yeah. And we're like, okay. And then, like, this is, like, the next example of, like, why on earth would they ever have a device like this just laying around on a starship?
And it's like this giant vacuum that goes over your shoulder and downward. Like,
but even the sound effects of the like, that was awesome. But then, like, his remark is like, okay, so the captain is putting the crew to work. Yeah. Also, pretty dark stuff with them, like, shooting the Tribbles. Like, how upsetting do you think that was to some Star Trek fans there?
That was pretty great.
I loved it, you know, but a lot of, you know, I don't know.
Like, it's a very dark humor to a lot of this, which I loved.
I don't think Star Trek usually does dark humor. It's maybe some off-the-cuff sorts of things. I think if you want to look at anything, maybe Deep Space Nine would do a little bit of that. But, like,
maybe a little bit of the Mirror Universe stuff.
Certainly, I think, with the Discovery, we're talking about, like, eating Kelpians.
Yeah, I
get that.
Yeah.
But I think this is probably the most consistent kind of black humor sort of thing that we've seen from Star Trek, though, which was funny. But there's this great line.
Actually,
though,
Harry Mudd a little bit, too.
I can buy that.
In Discovery, especially.
Yeah. But the best line from Larkin, though, was, you know, we have the captain putting everyone, Lucero putting everyone to work here. Mm-hmm. And he just sits back and is like, I'm not going to help. It's like, yeah. But otherwise, like, So what happened to the Tribbles in the meantime, though? Because we didn't see them to be like this overwhelming moving forward in their other adventures that we've encountered on Star Trek. Was there something, some further genetic modifications made? Were there certain like breeding issues that stopped them from being as prodigious as we saw them here?
I have no idea. The evolution of Tribbles is something I feel like is best left up to just our imagination. I think when you try to scientifically explain the way Tribbles operate, it doesn't make sense.
Oh, yeah. Let's not get hung up on that sort of stuff, you know. But this is still a fun one, because the other thing I kept thinking about is how with these sorts of short treks, you get to have kind of more of the adventures that are not as high stakes. Like, mm-hmm. I would love to wander around on, like, the USS Cabot, which is a research vessel.
Yeah.
Which they're doing things like trying to solve starvation on a planet. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the kind of Star Trek adventures that I think could be a lot of fun. But if you have Discovery where it's very goal-oriented, very destination-oriented, you're probably not going to get that opportunity.
Yeah.
Star Trek Picard, I think it's going to be another one of those things where it's very goal-oriented. And
sure.
So
Section 31 as well.
Yeah. So
I will say, though, to me this felt like it... I don't know if this was the intention, but it to me felt like it could have been a really good tester for Lower Decks.
Sure.
In that they're really, you know, getting this out there, getting people kind of used to this really broad comedy in Star Trek, really kind of taking a wacky look at the world, you know, shortly before a series that will be doing that is going to hit the air.
And that's what I'm curious with regards to what they're angling with regards to the upcoming animated short treks, because mm-hmm. we've been told before they're going to be kind of different animation styles. And so we wouldn't necessarily expect it to be the same sort of animation styles as we're getting from Lower Decks.
Right. So I'm hoping one is just like flipped paper.
Okay. I want stop motion animation, you know? it's all just Anson Mount cutouts, you know, like for magazine photo shoots, you know, like, moving his lips, like, you know, like when Conan O'Brien would have like the still photograph and like somebody with like moving lips were being filmed. Like, I'd like something like that for the next animated one.
Sure. Go nuts.
Okay. Okay. So, we move forward with all these adventures here. It's giving me some cosplay ideas, because I don't know if we've seen characters in their tighty-whities before on Star Trek. So getting to see him in his PJs there, that was Larkin in his PJs and his undies, that was pretty fun.
Have we ever seen, because you have the boxers, it's like everyone wears boxers, it seems, on Star Trek, right?
Or like, are they boxer briefs?
Yeah, boxer briefs, yeah.
So, look, underwear's evolution in, I guess it tells us that we've hit our peak here the 21st century.
They cannot perfect it.
No, whereas you think about what they had, you know, a century ago, very different, so.
They're going under a different philosophy than George Lucas had, which is no one wears underwear.
Was that his philosophy?
Yeah, in Star Wars, yeah. Yeah, so they would just tape everything down.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Okay.
It was a different time, Tyler.
Interesting. Yeah.
They were like, well, it makes sense. It's, you know, some sort of future world, right?
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I've got to ask you, Cam, would you ever try a Tribble?
No.
No.
You're not an adventurous eater.
I went to
Australia. I didn't want to eat crocodile or kangaroo. I'm like, you know what? I'm good. I don't know. Like, so if you like handed me a Tribble now, no, I wouldn't be that interested.
And like, they described it as kind of like scallop.
Yeah.
You're not a seafood eater either.
I am definitely not. No. So. What about you?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. I
would try anything. Like, so I'm totally, I've had,
you'd be like Noel.
I'm a foodie, man.
Yeah.
No, I've literally had like balut, which for people that don't know, it's chicken fetus, you mm-hmm. know, like I'll do anything.
As seen on Survivor multiple times.
Multiple times. Yeah. So overall, look, I think like a Tribble episode like this, it's kind of great. We should also talk about kind of Star Trek's first ever post-credit sequence.
Yeah.
We get the cereal commercial. I heard that there was a post-credit sequence, which is why I stayed tuned. And I did not know what to expect. And this was just like utterly delightful. I don't know what those kids were thinking when they're filming this. Like, they're like, what is going on here? Like, I've got to pretend to want to eat this hairy sort of like, or hairy berry was my favorite flavor that they had there. There's also, was it like barbecue ranch or something?
Something like
which
that.
Sounds
yeah,
like
yeah.
disgusting for cereal.
And the line, they're pregnant with flavor.
Yeah. And there's another great one where like, more human DNA than any other brands.
Yeah. You know?
And I also like how the reaction when they all found out that Larkin put his DNA into the Tribbles, they're all disgusted. He's like, Noel's DNA would be any better.
like this Larkin character, do you think we're going to see more of this personality? Not necessarily like a replica of this character, but like more of these comedic, really broad characters in Star Trek going forward?
I hope so, because they kind of touch on that with Harry Mudd as well. The other thing that I'm curious about is kind of almost an analog with, say, one Reg Barkley, which it's like you kind
of that too,
question how this person makes it as far as they do in Starfleet, because you're always told it's the best of the best.
Right.
Boy genius Wesley couldn't get in on his first attempt to get into an academy. So how is it like somebody with such low EQ as Larkin, how is it that he makes it to, I think his rank was like a lieutenant or something at this point.
Yeah. So, maybe his like uncle or something was on the admissions board.
I just don't see like that being like that nepotism being a thing in the 23rd century though. That's why I was just like, huh, it's interesting. Yeah. Maybe they just needed bodies.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you think there will be humans that are that petty still at that point?
You know, I think you could go back to the argument for doing the NX-01 Enterprise series where like, well, humans weren't as evolved, so that's why we can have them, you know, in kind of the pre-Roddenberry vision of humanity.
Right.
I would hope not, you know, especially if you are serving as a Starfleet member, but...
Although humans have been petty for so many thousands of years, I don't know that a few more hundreds of years is going to make that much of a difference.
All we can do is hope, you know. Yeah. But you know what? Maybe just need some a nibble of Tribble to get that out of your system there. The other thing that I thought was interesting, though, is the uniforms. They were different uniforms than we've seen before, and I think some of that falls into the timeline. So they're kind of variations of the Discovery uniforms. Mm-hmm. And, well, the other thing that I kept like staring at was that Lucero's gold uniform, she had like the big black collar.
Yep.
Nobody else had those collars, and those collars were... Like, we've seen those collars before in Star Trek Discovery. So they were doing variations of the uniform there, which I thought was interesting. Yep. If you're on a science vessel in what I would presume would be, this probably takes place, like, what, 5 or 6 years before Star Trek Discovery, just based on Pike being the captain.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, he is seeing off his science officer to take command.
In a great scene. A great scene. Oh, like, I thought Anson Mount is just killing it in whatever little screen time he even has. I love when he's like, it's going to be really difficult or whatever. And he's like, no, I'm just kidding. Go have fun. I'm like, oh, this guy's the best.
Well, and that's just it. Like, I think it's like Anson Mount, like, we know the reason you're coming back for 30 seconds of screen time to blow us all away is you're going to be doing this Pike spinoff, whether you like it or not, sir. It's like, it seems destined to happen.
Yeah, like, I just loved his little bit here. And I thought Lucero was actually a really great character, too.
I did,
like, you know, she was played by Rosa Salazar, who was Alita, Battle Angel. And again, I'm like, it's actually kind of a get for a short Trek, you know? Like, I'm like, wow, okay. Like, she's just starring in this 15-minute streaming story? Sure, fair enough. Like, this is someone who could easily be written into... you know, ongoing Star Trek adventures at some point down the road.
But I also kind of feel sorry for, like, her career path at this point after she's in command of a ship for 2 weeks and she loses the ship because of the actions of this a-hole, essentially.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, maybe they had some sympathy, though, at the end when she's just like, he's an idiot.
Yeah. Or no, I do want to correct you. A moron.
Or a moron. Yeah.
I do like how this might have been the first use of moron in Star Trek 2, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
But so if we do the timeline right, I think what's going on here is like Pike has seen her off and then essentially Q&A takes place, I don't know, like a week after, because that's when they're welcoming Spock aboard the ship, which is interesting. So she must have, I don't know, like I'm just wondering like what kind of avenues, if we get the Pike spinoff, maybe she can like appear in this time period going forward. But the thing is, like, looking at that shot of the 1701, like just like that opening shot to kick off the episode, it is just so gorgeous what they're doing here. And it's just like, it would feel like a waste if we don't get to see further adventures of the 1701 and crew.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think we all want it. So it's just a matter of time, hopefully. But, I thought it was interesting, some of the nods, too. Like, this felt very Gremlins to me. Like, it felt like there was a lot of nods to that movie in the way it was portrayed, the way they were breeding. The shots reminded me a lot of the way you see the spores, like, coming off the back of Gizmo. I loved the shot of the woman like screaming in the in the like confined space, like that's filling up with tribbles. Like, it's such an absurd image.
Yeah.
And it just made me laugh so hard. It has that horror comedy thing going for it. I also was reminded a lot of the movie Willard, which is also this kind of
Crispin Glover.
Well, that's the remake, but sure. Oh, okay. Yeah, you know, same story of this guy who's really odd, who has control over these furry creatures that gather in masses. Like, it reminded me a lot of that with Larkin, who's this very toxic character who has this, like, these armies of tribbles behind him.
Right.
Like, it definitely reminded me of that.
Well, even just the shots that we see from a VFX standpoint of seeing like the tribbles fill up.
Why do they look this good, Tyler? These are short treks. They shouldn't cost anything.
Well, I know you're being sincere with that question, but it's a different era of TV. They're not making like their intention is not to make like cheap things. Like they want to make like legit content.
I'm
for
seeing
people.
Movies that cost $200 million that don't look this
good. Oh yeah. I know. Yeah. Although you and I, we did have that discussion about Brent Spiner's VFX
That's true.
Like de-aging, where I think we both think that there needs to be some additional work done on this before Star Trek Picard premieres in January.
Or just replace him with a tribble.
Well, there you go.
No, that's heresy. I'm sorry, everyone.
Yeah. So the other thing that I don't know, I'm curious about is the commercial at the end. How do you think it ranks up as, I guess, the only other commercial that we know of in the Star Trek universe, which is the Quarks jingle?
Sure.
You know, I thought that was kind of a...
That one's pretty great, too. I mean, the Quarks one is intended more to just be kind of, like, terrible.
Yes.
And really gaudy. Whereas, like, this one is kind of genius. Like, they were very clever. I mean, a lot of thought went into the making of this thing. And I just hope that people saw it, because I have to suspect a lot of people turned it off after the, you know, as soon as it went to credits.
If CBS was smart, they'd, like, cut that 30-second bit up, put it on YouTube, and let it go viral or something.
Yeah.
Like, that would be fun.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea, because I think that's something that Star Trek needs to maybe experiment a little more, too, is if you're going to put together these little things, why not put out some viral Star Trek videos? Like, if you're going to shoot it, why not? You can do them cheap.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at the same time you're doing this episode, for example.
The other thing, we had a bit of a debate over the use of music in the previous short trek with Modern Major General.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Johnny Appleseed song playing in this?
Well, there's an interesting Star Trek connection there.
Go for it.
This is Bing Crosby singing it, of course. Okay. It was the grandfather of Denise Crosby. I think he was not the nicest guy from everyone's basically accounts, but nonetheless, there is that connection. And I mean, I enjoyed it. It was a funny idea. I mean, again, Johnny Appleseed is pretty on the nose, but I thought it was a fun usage of it.
Yeah. So you're more down with this sort of more modern music use in Star Trek versus Modern Major General.
Sure.
Okay. Yes. Gotcha.
Also, this is non-diegetic, so it's actually happening off screen. It's not the characters aren't singing this song.
Well, overall, like modern music, and I use that loosely. Okay. Star Trek, it's usually either like jazz music or else it's like Beastie Boys.
Sure.
What do you think of like the possibilities of using more modern music, maybe not the diegetic stuff, but maybe just like, because I think modern music, when you watch it in like TV shows or movies, it has kind of emotional connection to the viewers if it's done well.
Yeah, sure.
Some filmmakers are like, does anybody use it better than maybe Martin Scorsese or Quentin Tarantino? Like, those guys are masters.
Those are the two that jump to mind, at least at this point in time. I mean, I think Wes Anderson's really good at it as well.
Yeah, and I know that your favorite album of all time is Zach Braff's Garden State soundtrack, which
I have actually never seen that movie.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
You just listen to the soundtrack over and over again. You know? So I think there is like totally an avenue for us to use modern music within Star Trek, and like just kind of, it's going to have that much more of an emotional impact on us. And I think it would make sense.
I have to believe it's something that might happen a little more. That is definitely a trend you're seeing happening more and more, especially like, I think really in the wake of like Guardians of the Galaxy as well. Like, Marvel has really started to work that in. You know, the more successful things are, the trends tend to go from there. So I could see Star Trek experimenting with that and trying some different approaches. I mean, we've had Star Trek characters singing David Bowie.
Think about Wyclef Jean and Al Green in Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad.
Exactly. You know? So they're definitely playing around with these ideas. And I think it's great because it always seemed to me, in when I would watch like TNG and they'd be having these jazz recitals, I'm like, boy, does that seem boring to me.
Yeah.
Like, do they, that's, it's fine. Like, jazz is fine, but like, is that all they listen to?
What was it? Not like elevator jazz? Like, it, I don't think it was like...
It wasn't exciting.
It
jazz.
Wasn't Coltrane.
No, it was not experimental.
Like, it wasn't Thelonious Monk, you know? No. It's like, those are like the jazz masters, and they're going with elevator music instead. And
yeah.
It's like, really, guys?
And it's like, that kind of music has its time and place, preferably in elevators.
Yeah.
But, like, do they never mix it up? Like, it never felt like there was variety, because that's what I like about some of the choices they made on Discovery, is like, different types of music for different times, you know? Like, I think you should stick with that kind of idea.
Okay.
It can get tough, though, when you are picking contemporary music to fit into your future show. So I think you got to be careful. More careful than, like, Guardians of the Galaxy has to be.
Yeah, but I think that's why, like, David Bowie was, like, a genius pick.
Yeah.
You know, on the parts. I think if they could ever get, like, the pay the licensing for Beatles, I think Beatles could work as well. Because there's even, like... Stamets makes reference to his uncle being in a Beatles cover band, which is pretty hilarious too, you know?
Yeah. Who owns the rights to the Beatles now? It's not still on the Michael Jackson estate, is it?
It's kind of confusing. What I do know, though, is I think the first time that it was ever licensed for a TV show was in Mad Men, like maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It was done to great effect, but I remember reading an interview with the showrunner, and he was saying how expensive it was and how if... there's ongoing, like, months-long negotiations to get the song, and how if they weren't able to get the song, they probably would have had to rewrite the episode as well.
Right.
It was a pain. So that's why I suspect maybe Beatles probably aren't going to be happening anytime soon.
Yeah, I wonder how much of a headache it was to get it for the closing of the movie The Social Network.
Yeah, it's... But I think it's probably, like... bigger profile, bigger budget.
Yeah, more money
that.
To throw
so
around.
So I don't think David Fincher was sweating it as much as a Matthew Weiner
right.
was on Mad Men there. Cam, any final thoughts before you do like a ranking of Tribble Adventures in Star Trek?
Well, just this one really did leave me wondering what to expect from the next, you know, 4 short treks we're going to get.
Yeah.
Because I really feel like this, in a way, blew the doors open for anything. And I know, like, I've seen some people online kind of a little bit iffy on this one, feeling it's a little too much like the Orville or something like that. But I am, as we said, hoping it opens it up to new genres, like just doing weird, crazy things. But I am curious what these animation ones bring. We know we're getting a Picard one. And
we know we're getting a Pike one.
Yeah.
So those are the remaining 4.
So, like, is this Pike one, let's just say the Pike one's the next one, which would make sense to kind of group the Discovery Pike kind of ones together. Do you think it is a straightforward Pike adventure, or do you think it is something more broad?
I think it is a straightforward Pike adventure. Mm-hmm. I think what they're doing is they want to build up Pike as kind of this character that will shoulder the burden of his own series. I think... it's all just leading up to this.
Right.
So I don't think it's going to be his version of the escape artist, which would be amazing to watch. I'd love that. But and I think, if I recall correctly, CBS said it's more about him trying to escape from prison or something like that.
Right.
So that could be fun.
Maybe like just a prison break story.
There.
That could be really interesting.
Yeah.
Now, do you think we'll ever see Larkin or Lucero again?
Well, so Larkin's dead.
Sure.
Doesn't mean that he can't show up in a flashback. I think there's much
was
more...
Was he dead, Tyler? We never saw the body.
Well, they said it was tragic, you know. Lucero, I think there's a very good possibility of her coming back as well. But I think a lot of it is dependent on... Like, we know Discovery is blasting off to the future.
Yep.
Who... I still cannot wrap my head around a Section 31 spinoff and what timeline that it would take place in, blah, blah, blah. But maybe there's a possibility that she shows up there somehow.
Yep.
Or else, look, we keep talking about this Pike spinoff. Maybe she can pop in every once in a while there. But it is curious that, you know, you get like a higher profile actress comes in for, as you say, a 15-minute, you know, streaming sort of video content.
And I mean, H. John Benjamin is a pretty famous voice actor whose filmography list is very, very long. It's like the encyclopedia. So, I mean, he's also a pretty high profile name as well.
And I wonder if just for some of these actors are like, you want me to do a 15-minute Star Trek adventure?
Yeah.
Sure, sign me up. You want me to go to Toronto for like 4 days? Okay, that's fine.
Well, it's a great avenue for an actor like H. John Benjamin because he's probably not going to get called for the Section 31 show or maybe, you know, Star Trek Discovery when they're launching that show. But it is a good avenue to get interesting, quirky actors into a Star Trek story that would never get a phone call for Picard.
Yeah, no,
so
for sure.
I'm totally down for that.
Okay, so maybe I'll start from worst to first. I'll give it more Tribbles, more Troubles as number four.
Okay.
Then I'll do The Trouble with Edward, number three. Then I'll do The Trouble with Tribbles, number two. And then I've got to give it to Trials and Tribulations at number one, the Deep Space Nine episode. That was just such a fantastic, like, fan service-y episode that actually had, like, emotional gut punches, making Benjamin Sisko human with him having to get Kirk's signature there.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite Ben Sisko moments of all time.
I mean, there's no point in me giving the list because you just gave it.
Okay.
Like, I agree with you 100%. Yeah, I think that's the perfect order. And, I mean, I've liked all of them, but ultimately, like, you look at especially what those 2-hour-long Tribble stories were doing versus the shorter versions. They just had more room to play and do really ambitious, fun things that just make them, you know, that extra head better, I think, than the shorter versions. But, I mean, I am very curious going forward, how often do we do Tribble stories? Like, is it something that kind of goes on ice for a while?
I think it has to.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Like, I would love it if they just, you know, we get another one in, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Maybe Lower Decks would be the avenue to do that.
You know,
for like a one-off episode, you know.
But it's got to be a special episode.
I agree, you know. But look, we haven't had a stinker yet when it comes to Tribbles, and I think they know that they can't turn it to like the Voyager going back to the Borg well over and over again, because inevitably you're going to get some stinkers in there. Do you really want to sully the awesome reputation of the Tribbles?
And also, I mean, the Tribbles are not inherently interesting aliens.
No.
Like, it's about how you use them in your story and what you kind of infrastructure you build around them and how it all kind of generally falls apart. That's what's interesting.
Yeah.
So if you can come up with a great comedic premise, then the Tribbles will work. But the Tribbles don't really bring anything to a story.
Well, and one final thing, just jumping off that, though, like, it also sets up why the Klingons find them to be just a complete menace to the Empire,
which
is that they were able to seep in through Klingon borders. And I don't know, I just think this is such a fun, fan service-y episode, the one that works.
Totally.
And you could watch it without ever seeing a Tribble episode before this, and you would get it all. Like,
yeah, when I was watching it, I was even thinking, like, I know some people that would probably enjoy this that would not watch Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because it's not dependent on Star Trek to be enjoyable.
Well, you know, maybe we can use that as a jumping off point for a quick conversation about something else that we think about the possibility of media right now with CBS All Access's platform. Just this past weekend, we had El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie, premiere on Netflix. And I think you and I were both Breaking Bad fans. We enjoyed having an opportunity to revisit some characters in like one little pocket of a universe that could have still been explored here.
Sure.
And I'm wondering about the possibilities of maybe there's
some Star Trek references in there too.
Oh, I love that. For those that may not have caught it, pay special attention to Skinny Pete's living room. If you guys get the chance to watch Breaking Bad's movie in this coming week or so. But I think if we don't say get a Pike spinoff.
Yeah.
What about a Pike 2-hour adventure with Ethan Peck and Rebecca Romijn and Anson Mount? Like, I think that would definitely work, and I think CBS would be down with that. The other critical thing here is because of the Viacom merger, remember that we had Nick Meyer, he was commissioned to do that Khan trilogy?
Yeah.
And it got into a lot of rights issues because it was essentially supposed to be three 2-hour movies, and Paramount was like, no, we own the movie rights, even if you're doing this on a streaming platform, blah, blah, blah. With this unification, no pun intended, of the Star Trek franchises movie and film, mm-hmm. I think this is opening the possibility for CBS All Access to produce similar adventures like we saw with El Camino at Breaking Bad, like grabbing specific characters from different pockets of the Star Trek universe, just spending 2 hours with them, and like it opens up the possibilities even more.
Yeah, and you know, say there is scheduling problems, the idea of Anson Mount, Ethan Peck, and Rebecca Romijn all committing to shoot, you know, 10 or 15 episodes of a Star Trek series, if they can put together a film project, you could get them all there, and you could probably do a couple movies, you know, 2 or 3, and that would be a really good way, I think, to do Pike stories, because, you know, we've talked about how a lot of the Pike journey is pretty set up. Like, it's they're going to have to do some heavy lifting to put a series together, an ongoing series, that actually has interesting things to add to the Pike mythology. Whereas if you do these films, you can make them very much based on a specific mission they went on or something like that. That's the two-hour story you're telling. How does this, you know, affect the characters throughout? But it's not as dependent on, well, we've got to keep charting forward 15 more hours, you know, 15 more hours. Whereas this actually sounds really appealing to me. And I think in a world where we don't know what's going on with the Kelvinverse at this point, but I know that the chances of them ever doing an Anson Mount-led Pike on the big screen film series was zero.
Sure.
Like, that would never happen. Yeah. But now we could be getting it via streaming, which is a big avenue, as you know, say Al Camino, but also the Deadwood movie. You know, these things are going pretty good right now.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, maybe spitball for a second. I think if you want to do an economical sort of story within a pocket of the Star Trek universe that maybe still has stories to tell, go back to Armin Shimerman. Say, do you want to do a day in the life at Quark's? You know, you can return to Deep Space Nine without having to rebuild every single set. You rebuild one set. You get some characters drop in on the bar. You get some cameos. I'm sure you can have a fun adventure of Quark just trying to keep everything a-going at his bar over the course of one day. Like, I'd watch that for 90 minutes. Like, no sweat, you know, there. I mean, I think that would be a fun one.
It could also be a fun offshoot for, you know, the Picard show is going to be its own thing, but I totally think there would be an audience who would tune in to see a two-hour Worf movie.
I was actually thinking Worf as well. I think that's one. He's just such an iconic character.
And you're not going to give him the screen time on the Picard show, most likely, that would give that character as much development as you get in a lot of these TNG stories.
Do you think then Seven of Nine would also be a great candidate for like a two-hour film?
Yeah, for sure. Her, Janeway might too, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there are specific characters who I think could fill out a movie really well. And again, it removes the pressure of, can this character continue to do a series for multiple seasons? Well, I don't know. We've kind of said a lot with that character, but a two-hour story, you can make it about a specific incident, which is really interesting.
Yeah. I just think, Cam, we're living in the best age right now, like, for Star Trek content. And we're just, like, there was that dearth of, like, a decade where it was just, like, you'd get a JJ movie every, like, 4 years.
Yeah.
And I'm jealous of the kids growing up nowadays where, and also, like, I was living through the height of the 1990s where you had Deep Space Nine and Voyager both airing every single week, and you get a movie from the TNG crew every couple of years. Like, that to me, like, that was an amazing period, you know?
Yeah,
so I can't complain too much about, like, my own journey through Star Trek fandom, but now is the time to really be, like, a young person getting into it, because, like, you're never going to be treated so well at this point. Like, I think we are really lucky, and I wonder how long this train will be a-going for, but I think because of the new economic model for producing content on streaming platforms, and I think CBS is looking at their coffers and their, well, not, I shouldn't say coffers, more of like their libraries, and I don't know if they're going to be getting that many people watching Golden Girls or Caroline in the City.
Although, like, Golden Girls has had a real resurgence, so you never know. I think they are doing a reboot of it.
Well, recasting B. Arthur might be a little bit problematic, so that's the whole issue.
I just love that we could now do two-hour movies that aren't dependent on a studio getting together and being like, this is not going to open to money.
Yeah.
Like, there's no point making this.
Although I'm still, like, I cannot wrap my head around the Walking Dead trilogy of films, which Universal is going to distribute in theaters.
Although Downton Abbey is going to make $100 million.
That's a fascinating one, because you know what? Look at the audiences that are going to see that.
My mom went.
It's skewing older, though.
Yeah.
And I think those are the people that are going to go, you know, like, they're locking into, like, an underserved market, which I think is genius. But I just wondered, like, how many people are going to go to the Walking Dead movies in theaters?
How do you think the Breaking Bad movie would have done in theaters?
Well, it did get a limited release.
Limited,
you know. I don't think it would have done spectacularly well. I think, honestly, we probably would have looked at maybe a $10 million opening.
Yeah.
You know? I wonder what the budget was on this, because this movie did not look cheap. It looked quite beautiful within kind of that mise-en-scene of the Breaking Bad / Better Call Saul universe that entire crew was recruited for this, you know? I totally got sucked into it. So
I can never gauge how much something cost with Breaking Bad because the show looked amazing on no money.
Well, I'll also say this, like, props to Vince Gilligan. Every time I see him direct something, I'm like, this is like a good director.
Yeah.
Just the sense of just visuals that you get. Like, there are a couple images of street signs in this El Camino movie where I was just like hypnotized by the way that he shot street signs or the way that he had like a car like parked. I'm just like, yes. Like,
yeah.
So Star Trek, get adventurous with like kind of the directors. They've been doing a very good job with that.
They
with
have.
Discovery.
Yeah.
We're not in the Berman era anymore. And I think it, just get more experimental. I am down for that.
Yeah. I just wonder too, like, you know, trends tend to be like dominoes, you know, franchises are going to want to jump on trends. And I mean, you have so many of these TV shows now spawning movies. You know, you've got the Sopranos prequel coming as well.
Yeah.
How long does CBS sit there before going, you know what, we can do that too? Like, it just doesn't make sense to me why they would continue to sit on it.
I think they know that. I think there's going to be more announcements about, like, familiar adventures with familiar people that we all know and love. Like, they've got to do that.
Yeah, are there any actors you can think of that they might be able to lock down for a two-hour movie, like, who would not be available for a series?
Who would not be available?
Yeah, like ones who it's just out of the question that this actor would probably sign up for a series.
Do you mean like a Star Trek actor?
Yeah, yeah. If there's anyone.
I'm thinking not so much the actor won't do it, but it's CBS won't commit to doing a 10-episode, 3-season, you know, Colonel Kira spinoff.
Sure.
But I could watch, you know, I mentioned Quarks. What if it was Colonel Kira and Ops for a day?
Right.
Like, I can imagine that being kind of a thing. What about you? Who's on your mind? You're the one that posed the question.
Right.
So I
know,
wonder if
I
you
didn't
had,
have an answer, actually.
Yeah, okay.
I can't think of anyone. Like, I don't think there's any Star Trek stars who have become, like, massive box office forces who aren't available to get reeled back in.
Yeah.
I don't. Not that I can think of. There might be someone at home who's...
Dwayne Johnson.
Sure, yeah. I mean, there would be, I guess, be the question mark of if you would ever potentially see a Kelvinverse movie on streaming. I don't know.
Or at least maybe a Kelvinverse mini-adventure. You know? If it's all going to be under the same umbrella soon enough, you know, give it to John Cho to do a Captain Sulu sort of deal. I don't know. Like, that would be okay.
That would be cool, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, though, it just popped into my head. I would love to see a movie... Actually, there's two I'll pitch right now, because you know you pitched earlier the ones you'd like to see. One, I'll get the boring one out of the way first. I would love to see a two-hour movie that really maybe in one adventure summed up what was sort of the root of the Pike-Spock friendship.
Okay.
I think that would be really interesting. Yeah. The other one, a Shran story.
Oh, okay.
We've never really... We got teased with Shran potentially being in Season 5 Enterprise. Never happened. But I would love to see... maybe an Archer Shran team up movie or something.
I want to know who it is that's going to be pitching this because they realize the majesty that is this character and Jeffrey Combs' performance. I fear, though, it's like CBS is going to be like, you want us to produce a 2-hour film featuring 65-year-old Jeffrey Combs as a character that appeared in a less popular Star Trek spinoff?
And the other execs are like, oh, some random podcaster said he wants
it. Yeah.
What do we know?
He starts lighting his cigar with like a $100 bill after that meeting. He's
like, I feel like when it comes to Star Trek spinoffs, we're going to see expanded upon. Enterprise is going to be at the low end of probability.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see TNG is probably the one that could spawn the most.
Give me the Empress Hoshi like spinoff. Give me 2 hours of that. Get Manny Koto on the line. I want an Empress Hoshi spinoff. I'm just putting it out there.
That would be gold.
It would be.
Yeah, yeah. Do they call them long treks?
Okay. Let's go with long trek. Empress Hoshi. That really roll off the tongue.
Awesome. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
Okay, we teased it for the last few weeks. We kind of didn't realize what the schedule is going to be with these short treks, so we will finally be going back for Star Trek Enterprise two-parters with Shockwave, parts 1 and 2. That'll be an interesting one, Cam.
Yeah.
I've been teasing it forever. I cannot wait to get to the gazelle speech. That's all I want to talk about.
a Daniels 2-hour movie, maybe?
Yes. I'm sure that's all, that's right after they do the Shran one. Guaranteed.
Okay, you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in vacuuming up tribbles, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, P as in Porthos spinoff, O-R-T-O-N.
I don't know if Breezy's around anymore.
Oh, that's dark.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Now rosy red, you pick 'em, they're sweet to eat. An apple, such a wondrous treat. Here's a seed planted deep. Seeds can earn their board and keep. Here's a seed, take good care. Soon you'll find an orchard there. Soon you'll find an orchard there.
Transfer complete.